Welcome back to the Powerful Parenting Journey. Today I'm here with my friend Shannon Wendt. And man, this woman is a firecracker. And let me just tell you, I know that, in the midst of parenting, sometimes we can feel like, oh my gosh, like we can feel very overwhelmed. And, there are times in my parenting journey since I have met Shannon that I'm like, well, if Shannon can do it, I can do this. Because Shannon, tell everybody how many beautiful children you have.
We have 8 kids.
8 beautiful, amazing kids. And let me just tell y'all, the thing about Shannon is, and I know, again, I love to uplift my guests because I have them on and I know they're beautiful, incredible people, and that's why I'm bringing them to you guys who are listening. And nobody is perfect, but man, when I see Shannon, she's just always put together in like the cutest outfits and has a pleasant attitude. And again, nobody's perfect, but not only that, she's running an incredible business, and just has the heart of gold. And so I'm so excited to share Shannon with you and just for you to hear her story and this journey with 8 children, you guys, 8 kids plus running a business. And I just think she's a rock star. So Shannon, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the Powerful Parenting Journey podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, can you tell me, okay, just have you always known, did you know that you wanted to have 8 kids since you were little?
Yeah, it was a decision that I came to probably in high school. My husband and I actually met in high school. We were both in youth group together. And I just have one sister, and my husband kind of had a similar decision or just kind of realization. He's an only child. And in youth group, when we were hanging out in high school, the houses that we would gravitate to were the big families, the ones that had 7, 8, 9 kids. And we'd go to their houses, and there's always so much life. We'd go there because we're gonna, go play cards or, play football or whatever. And there's somebody else who's playing music, and somebody's baking cookies, and somebody else is, curled up reading a book. Like, there's always just like so much going on in every single one of these houses. They were never frazzled, and maybe they were a little messy or whatever, but nobody was frustrated or worried about that. It was just like this beautiful, welcoming place for all of us kids. And independently, we both just realized, like, this is what I want. And so that was one of the first things that we discussed when we started kind of exploring dating, and we're like, yes, we both want this. This is exactly the kind of home that we want, and praise God. And that's really, sometimes for better or worse, that's, our house is the place where all the teenagers end up hanging out.
That is the coolest thing ever. Everybody wants to be, well, I think everybody wants to be the house where all the kids come to hang out. And yeah, that whenever you have a whole bunch of kids, there's usually some sort of just full, it's just full of life. It's a lot harder
Yeah.
to find a hole in the house to get separated into, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And but I find that so many families nowadays are feeling like, I'll have conversations with people and they're like, it's just not what I thought it was. And a lot of that is because as their kids are getting older, they are actually, people are finding a separate area of the house to hang out on devices. And
Yeah.
I saw this really sad picture and it showed the top view of a house looking down. And it was a rather large family, but every single person in the family was like on the device somewhere inside of the house. And again, for those of you who might be listening for the first time to the Powerful Parenting Journey podcast, it's not that I am anti-technology at all in any way, shape, or form, but I think a lot of us are starting to realize that we are up against something that is different from what we've ever faced
Yeah.
before as parents, and trying to figure out and navigate what does this need to look like for us? Are there what do we just not know yet about what our kids are facing when it comes to technology in beautiful ways and positive ways, and then also negative ways? So with that thought, Shannon, what do you guys have going on as far as screens in your home? Like, how do you handle that with, maybe your olders have phones or they don't have phones, or, how does that work in your home?
Yeah, the first thing is that All the devices in our home are Apple devices, so that there's really kind of one central place where my husband and I can kind of keep an eye on screen time. And there aren't these like other devices where they have access to the internet. And, you know, because at one point, a grandparent gave my kids Kindles for the purpose of reading on them. And the first edition of the Kindle was just the paper white where all they could do was read on it. And that was great. And then when that one died, they got upgraded to one that was really more of a tablet. And there was a period of time where I didn't quite realize that it wasn't the same as the paper white, and that they were accessing the internet. And thankfully, this, you know, it didn't cause any problems, but they were playing games, they were watching movies and, you know, fairly innocent stuff, but wasting time and doing things that I didn't realize they were doing. So that was for us kind of a realization that, like, at least, you know, if they're all app devices, then we've got access. We can see what they're doing. We know kind of who's online when. And the other thing is, we really delayed getting our kids any kind of device. We don't have, like, I've got iPads in there, you know, something that we use. The little kids maybe have access to it for some schoolwork, other things, but they're mine. Like, they don't leave my office without my knowing. And when they're done being used, they go back. And then we put off like giving kids their own device until they're driving, close to driving age. And there's been, you know, a little wiggle room with different kids if, you know, they have different needs with events or sports or something, where it helps us for them to have a device where we can get in touch with them. But the understanding with all of our kids is that these are my devices. These are our devices, mom and dad's. These phones do not belong to you, but you can call it your phone, but it always belongs to us. And if at any point we ask for that back, it comes right back to us. And you know, there's an interesting debate, I think, among parents with kids' privacy. And I'm of the opinion that they don't need privacy on their devices. It's not helpful. They're not formed well enough to navigate difficult things. And we have had some brushes with scary situations with our kids that could have gotten a whole lot worse if we weren't frequently just, you know, like picking up their phone and scrolling through their texts and their things. And they all know that we do that. And I'm not naive. If anybody really wanted to do something and, you know, delete all their stuff, like, you know, they could do that. But there is that sort of trust relationship between us and our kids, and
That's
they
good.
trust that I'm not gonna, you know, scroll their stuff and just use, you know, their messages or the information they're sharing against them, or tease them about, you know, who they like or what they're whatever. But it's more often been met with, and even from my older kids saying, actually, like coming back to me and saying, like, I was really grateful. It was actually really comforting to know that I kind of wasn't in this internet stuff alone, that you were going to weigh in on some of these conversations and things that
Wow.
were going on. And my oldest daughter, who's 20 now, she graduated 3 years ago, and her first 2 years after high school, she spent doing mission work. She was a missionary around the US, putting on retreats for high school and junior high students. And the first time she came home on break, and one of the first things she said to me was, "Thank you. Thank you so much for sheltering me." And she said, "I know I gave you a lot of grief a lot of times, but seeing what these kids are dealing with, and you know, I am so glad that you protected us from so much of this." And you know, she said it in, you know, the context of the rest of the family, so everybody else got to hear it. And the other kids who, you know, are in the midst of giving me grief were able to hear that. And now they, even the younger kids, can echo that and are appreciative of the boundaries that we've placed and the protection that we have over them. And so, have there been squabbles when I try to take somebody's phone or look through somebody's phone? Yeah, sure. But, you know, I think underneath they do actually understand and appreciate that.
Well, I agree with you. And I think that one of the big things that people forget is that our kids they longed for us to treat them like adults, right? From like the age of 5, pretty much.
Right.
But the reality is like you said, they're not quite ready for all of that. And even in the midst of it, even once they're starting to get older, while you would give more permission as they're getting older, it is something that my kids as well, Shannon, they're just like so grateful. It's like, I'm so glad you taught me this, because they see their friends, and they see they on their own, without me pointing it out, will go out with their friends, and they're like, these people are just completely different and molded by social media. They're molded by, what they see. And then another complaint they have is they go out and they'll be with their friends, and they're all just scrolling on the phone, and they're just like, "Hey guys, hi, like we're together, like let's do something fun." But they're just scrolling, scrolling, scrolling. And I know that's not everyone, but I pride myself in knowing that my kids get that I'm trying to raise them differently, and that I am trying to protect them. And again, I don't know. I think about the boundaries that were set in my life that were actually healthy boundaries that were set by my mom. There weren't many, let me just tell you. There were not many. But the ones that were there, it reminds me, and I often tell my daughter this. It's like, okay, so say you are a sheep, right? And there's a shepherd, a good one, and that shepherd puts up fences. And one sheep looks at that fence and says, "How dare the shepherd lock me up and tell me where I can't go?" And then the other sheep is like, "Wow, I'm so glad that the shepherd cares enough to put up a fence to keep the wolves out." You know what I mean? And also too, to prevent me from jumping over, because there's a really deep river over there. And talking with our kids about not wanting them to be weary of how God gives us boundaries, and how we as parents try to figure out what boundaries are best for each child, and how to navigate that, because it is about, we love you so much that we are going to protect you. Because this world, I think Shannon, what do you think about this? It's almost like there's been so much of a bubble in the world, at least in the United States, I feel like, that people don't want to acknowledge that there's real evil. I don't know if you have seen the same, but it's almost like some people definitely just don't even want to acknowledge that, there are real predators. There are real, disgusting, just awful, horrible things that just really, honestly, could ruin a young child. Would do ruin they ruin children. And a lot of times when we give our kids a phone without thinking through this, and without maybe setting up some boundaries, we're pretty much, not just exposing the world to them, but exposing them to the world, but exposing the world to them, and so I don't know, what are your thoughts on that? Do you see that as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think, it's just our human tendency to want to make things easy
That's true.
and so, if there's anybody that tells you like it's fine, they're fine, like all the kids have devices, like it's no big deal. It's what, they're gonna have to get used to it somehow. Whatever that little kind of lie is, our tendency is to like, okay, like I can check, I've got so much going on in the rest of my life, I can just check that that's fine. You're right. Yeah, it's fine. And we just want to be able to make things simple. We want our life to be easy. And the fact of the matter is that we were not made for comfort. We were not
That's
made
so true.
for life to be free of struggle and stress and sacrifice and, all the heavy and difficult things. That's what this world is really all about. And there's not going to be a way, we're not able to totally inoculate ourselves from struggle and suffering. And when we try to do that, all we're really doing is really putting up blinders to the real suffering and the difficult and heavy things that are all around us. And the kind of the other part of that is that we also want to like blame. We want to make it somebody else's fault when there are difficult things and scary things. And you think that like those evil things in the world, like that's their fault. Like there's something, it's black and white, like there's the left or right, like it's their fault, like we're on the good side, and when we kind of make this dichotomy, like we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, and we can think like, well, we can just live in this bubble, like we've created this conservative bubble or whatever, and you know, we live in a Christian community and that's a them problem, not an us problem. And we can check out from that, or just kind of like check it off our mental do. I don't have to worry about that. We're good. But evil is so insidious that it really is everywhere. And it's the human condition. We're just, you know, in a broken world, and it's going to get into your family in one way or another. And you've got to be proactive. You can't just check it off your list and think that you're somehow immune from any kind of suffering or any kind of, you know, struggle or temptation or difficulty or,
yeah,
you know, whatever the case may be.
Well, and you remind me of just like all the, you know, Hollywood stars that you would think, oh my gosh, they have everything. They have just everything possible. And even some people who have had, you know, everything is all set up. They've got anything their heart could desire that money can buy, right? And they still find struggle in the midst of it, in their mind, in their heart. And you're so right. I see that more and more and more. And then I think there's a more prevalent teaching that's coming up now in the entrepreneurial space, which is really cool for me to see, is that, you know, like you said, we're not built for comfort, but yet that's what we as humans actually as a default seek. And we try to avoid all of the things that could harm us. But in reality, it's the things that we overcome that make us stronger and make us better and make us wiser. And so every time we're trying to avoid the obstacles, oh, what is that book? The Obstacle is the Way, right?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
There's a book. It's called The Obstacle is the Way. I think it's Ryan Holiday. I'm spacing right now, and I feel really ashamed of that because it's such an incredible book. But the book is talking about, and Myron Golden was the first person I heard talk about this, but essentially talking about how, you know, in order to become who you need to become, to do great things and to stand for really something huge, you have to go through the obstacles. The obstacle is the way. It's not that you try to have to find a way around the obstacle or avoid the obstacle altogether, or, you know, put your fingers in your ears and la, 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 la. It's actually just going through that. And I've found personally walking this out with my kids and just having these tough conversations has proven to strengthen our relationships in incredible ways, because I'm talking to them, you know, once it may be time to have the phone conversation or whatever. Well, we start talking with our kids really young about the dangers of screens, the pros of screens. I mean, we're a tech family. But from the very beginning, just head on, just like, here's what we know thus far with all this access and what we see happening. I don't have it right in front of me here, but I have a new book out by a guy named Jonathan Haidt. I think I'm saying his name wrong, but the book is called The Anxious Generation. And the charts on what is happening in the world right now with our children, with depression and anxiety and suicide, it's going off the charts, but yet they are living the most convenient, comfortable life.
Yes, yes.
And it's mind blowing. He was actually just interviewed on the Joe Rogan podcast. I had already been trying to get him on this podcast. Now he's been on Joe Rogan's. I'm like, oh, no way he's going to get on mine, but I'm going to keep trying for you guys. But yeah, Shannon, I think there's so much wisdom in what you're saying. So what, is there any shadow of this in like how you were raised and what you're bringing over to your kids as far as all of this goes? Like, how did you learn that comfort isn't the path?
Well, and this is a conversation that my kids and I have been having a lot lately. And I think this has a lot to do with screens, because whenever, and I noticed this in myself first, I'm actually writing a book right now. And I noticed really clearly that every time I came up against something difficult, like as I'm doing research and there was like something that I kind of had to assimilate and like put together, or like take some abstract ideas and figure out like how to articulate it in a way that everybody could understand. Every time that I came up against something that was difficult to write or to put together, I caught myself like backing out and just like instinctively grabbing my phone to do something mindless.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And I realized that what the Lord was actually really calling me to do, not only in just the process of writing, but I was noticing this in my parenting, I was noticing this in my work, in my relationship, that every time there was something difficult, I would want to lean out. And what we really need to do, and the obstacle is the way, like that's such a key way to say it, is we have to, like, every time we come against that difficulty, instead of escaping in whatever way, I mean, it can be screens, but it could be 100 different things. We have to lean into that difficulty and we have to get creative. And that's a lesson that I learned from my mom really early on. So my parents got divorced when I was 5, and then we were raised by my mom, and she's a nurse, and life was really, really difficult for us at a lot of points. And there's one, you know, if I thinking about like this lesson of like not of like really leaning in when it's difficult, was our first Christmas that we spent just the three of us. And like, you know, we just moved, super poor, like completely broke. My mom just started a new job. And of course, like everything, I'm sure emotionally that's going along with all of that. Christmas came and we had no extra money. I don't even remember what presents were that year, but I just remember like it getting closer and closer to Christmas and there's like no decorations. We didn't have the money to get a Christmas tree yet. And we finally got a Christmas tree like just the few days before Christmas. And it was like Charlie Brown Christmas. Like this is the clearance tree that nobody wants. You know, my mom picked it up for just a few extra dollars that she had left at the end of the week, whatever it was. But then there was no extra money left for buying new ornaments, you know, all the things that she had to leave behind when she left. And instead of, you know, saying what was me or like being a victim of the situation, my mom just got creative. And so we filled our Christmas tree with cookies. We made Christmas cookies and we decorated them. And, you know, we had some like leftover construction paper and, you know, just made the whole tree was filled with just handmade construction paper ornaments and cookies. And I still have one of those construction paper ornaments. And it really is to me just like this reminder of when it gets difficult, you can either be a victim or you can be a creator in that moment. And when you lean in and you become a creator, really incredible things happen. We had an amazing Christmas. I, as a kid, never felt deprived. I never felt like, you know, I missed out. But there were a lot of things that we couldn't do that other kids got to do. There are things that I did go without, but I never was made to feel that way because my mom always got creative. Mm-hmm. And when we couldn't do, you know, the expensive camps or the things that my friends got to do, oh, we went camping in the backyard or we went to the campground nearby, or, you know, we just did really, really cool things that were just super creative that had that. And other, I think other people, and I, you know, had other friends who grew up in divorced families whose parents did play the victim. And, you know, they suffered incredibly because they always felt like they had to do without, like they were missing out on so much because that was the language and that was the mode of operation in their family of being a victim of all of this that was done to them. And I never felt like that. I never felt like, and there was a lot of like, you know, I remember at one point there was like a group at school for like kind of like group therapy or group counseling. I don't even know what the intention of it was, but it was a group of us kids who were all from divorced families. They got us together one afternoon a month at school. And like hearing these other kids talk, I was like, I don't feel like any of this. Like, I don't feel like I am struggling or suffering in any way because of this. Like, certainly, like, you know, daddy daughter dance, like, you know, my dad is a wonderful man. He lived in a different state for quite a while and he eventually moved back and we got to see him more, but it was a long time when he wasn't around and I wished he was, and there was some of that that, you know, I wish was different. But my mom just did a really good job of getting creative.
Wow.
And I think that really is something that I've taken into the rest of my life and tried to teach my kids, is that bad things are going to happen, difficult things, heavy things, they're all going to happen. And you have the choice in each of those moments to be a victim or a creator.
That is so powerful, Shannon. I mean, I hope everybody who's listening gets that. Because if we can hold on to that, I think that I'm thinking back on my own life where there were times Where, yeah, I mean, really, really rough, but it's that resourcefulness, right? Resourcefulness to be a creator. And the fact that I find with kids, especially whenever kids will come over to our house, that maybe their parents are, this is a no negative toward everybody's got so much going on, you know, but like you can tell that the kid is not used to getting attention. And you know, a family doing some stuff together, and we'll just sit down and do the simplest thing, like playing Uno. And they're like, "This was the best night of my life." And I'm like, "Whoa, honey, like, oh, you know, it's like it's a beautiful thing, but at the same time, it breaks your heart, you know, like just playing a simple game of Uno or playing cards or and it's in those moments that such beautiful memories are made with our kids, I would say. Shannon, you've got 8 kids, like, and you're running a business. Your husband is in business as well. How do you navigate, you know, everything you have going on and working hard on being a present mother with your kids?
It's tough. I mean, it's definitely a struggle. A key part of that is just having really good help. We're blessed to have grandparents nearby that can help with kids and, you know, running kids' places, and they help watch that, you know, both of the grandmas take a different day of the week to help watch the kids, so that can kind of be my like very focused work day. And then my team at work, I from the very beginning just worked really hard to hire really well and to create systems within my business of accountability, so that even if I'm not in the office and staring over their shoulder, we have ways of just knowing that everybody's making progress towards our goal. Everybody understands our goals and everybody knows the steps that need to be taken to hit those goals. And, you know, they know, like, we have a language around how we talk about those goals and the tasks that line up to those goals, and if somebody is or isn't kind of following those tasks in order to hit our goals. Like, we've established a language around that. So it's not like, you know, we have to reprimand people or I've got to, like, you know, breathe down somebody's neck to get their stuff done. Like, we just know how the team works and how the team communicates so that we can make that continual progress, and how we can just kind of, you know, put a process or a person kind of in check if things are not on track. And so those leveraging help is probably one of the most important things that I've done. But also, just personally for myself, I had to realize that life can't be this perfectly balanced set of scales. You know, we think about like work-life balance, and we, you know, think of when we think about or try to achieve work-life balance, we ourselves become that scale with our arms stretched out, and we, you know, put a little on one side, so we've got to put a little on the other. And it's exhausting to try to keep this set of scales perfectly balanced. And, you know, kind of the lie, I think, that maybe especially for women, you're trying to think about work-life balance, is that it's something we work for, and then if we're successful, we've achieved it, and it's, you know, maybe it could be like set it and forget it, like you've arrived. But it is this constant process, and instead of thinking about it like this set of scales that you've got to work to balance and then make it stick, it's more like balance and counterbalance. So life really is more like a seesaw where things are going to get out of balance, but then you just have to counterbalance. And there's times of intentionally focusing more on one area, and then, you know, sort of like a seesaw, when you've really got to get your feet on the ground in, you know, either business or some part of your personal life. And there are things about work that just have to get left up in the air for a while. And you have to kind of be okay with the maybe the chaos or the, you know, the fallout from that, because you're focusing on what's really important. And then seasons can shift, and you can leave, you know, maybe, you know, some work things or whatever up in the air, and you can put your feet back down on the ground with work or whatever it is. And there's, you know, in my own life, this I've seen this shift of balance and counterbalance a lot. And, you know, especially when you're in a more extreme season where you've, you know, like you and I were talking before we began recording about the first year of some of my youngest kids were super intense. And especially with my youngest, he had a lot of feeding issues, and it really became my full-time job. Like, not exaggerating, it took me 8 to 10 hours a day. just to make sure that she got enough food in her and appointments and different things. And, you know, it was a lot for almost the first whole year of her life. That was, no kidding, my full-time job. And so there were a lot of work things that had to get left up in the air. And, you know, praise God, I had a beautiful team that was able to keep all the wheels on the bus and keep things going, but we weren't doing a lot of growing because I'm kind of the visionary, the driver, like the, you know, more strategic. We were able to maintain everything and it was fine. But when our seasons kind of shifted, I had to put my feet back on the ground with work stuff and, you know, kind of fix some things that had gotten neglected in that season. And, you know, I had to be okay with that.
Yeah.
I had to be okay with focusing on my little one, knowing that there are some things that are falling apart at work. And I think what enables us to be able to have those focused seasons in one area of our life or another is to understand what the non-negotiables are in our family, in our personal life, and in our business. And that when you're focused on a different area, the only things that you worry about on the other areas that are getting left up in the air are those non-negotiables. And so when I have a more focused time at work and I can't be as present with the kids as I would like to be, we have some non-negotiables as a family. You know, schoolwork would be one, prayer time as a family in the evening, family dinner time. Those are just a couple of our non-negotiables. No matter how busy we are, no matter how much is going on, we have dinner together as a family and then we sit down to pray afterwards. You know, and we have that, you know, a little bit of time in the morning, at least a little bit, where we're focused on the core subjects. We homeschool. So we homeschool some of our kids. Some of them are in like a homeschool co-op partnership program. So they get their core classes. But my three middle kids, you know, no matter how busy we are at work, we spend a couple of hours together in the morning, just focusing, making sure they're getting their basics, reading, writing, math. And
that's
so,
awesome.
And there's, you know, there's similar non-negotiables with work too.
Yeah. I love that you drew that out because, I think more often than not on this podcast, whenever I'm interviewing high achieving entrepreneurs who are doing incredible things and they've got kids, that's the answer. Like work-life balance. Excuse me. Wow. Work-life balance is a myth, right? Like it's really truly a myth. And I've looked at my own journey with my business and my non-negotiable is being a present mother. That's one thing that has been high priority from the beginning because I started my business so I could be with my kids. And then the crazy dichotomy of like the very thing you started so that you could be with your kids turns around and starts trying to take you away from your kids. And so there's hard choices you have to make. And I definitely, in my journey, had decisions where I was like, all right, yeah, my business could have grown faster. Like it could have, if I was willing to sacrifice this time with the kids or being present or showing up in a certain way with the kids. But that was the non-negotiable. And so I love the idea of a seesaw. I've never really thought about that, Shannon. I think that's very insightful. And most high achieving entrepreneurs that I know, they make the time where there is extreme focus and they prep the family and they say, hey, we've got this going on right now. This is what's going to happen. This is how I'm going to have to be focused in doing this over here. And then this is when this part will taper off and we'll go back to normal, or we'll go on. I know some entrepreneurs, I mean, they just like, they'll work super hard for a season. I'm talking like a month or 2 months. And then they'll play with their family for 2 and 3 months, you know, like go vacationing. And it's like, every time I turn around, they're in a different place. I'm like, wow, that's crazy. But you know, it's whatever you can find that works to continue to build that family legacy, you know? Shannon, do you have anything that you have found that is like your best parenting hack? And I'm not talking like keeping the house clean, but like when it comes to the relationships with your kids, What is the one thing you feel like has been like, oh man, this is good?
I think there's an acronym, and I know there's a couple of different versions of this acronym depending on, you know, whose book you're reading it in. But we learned it as PTFAR, PTFAR, and it's programming, feelings, actions, wait, I did that. I missed one. Programming thoughts, feelings, actions, results. And this is a tool that we learned in business or in coaching, actually. My husband learned it. He's a real estate coach. So he learned it to use on his coaching clients. And we've heard other like life coaches and stuff teach that as well. And it's something that we've used with our kids with great success, especially in getting them out of that like victim mindset. There are things that are going to happen. Programming, you know, that's the stuff that you can't control. That's the stuff that life just throws at you. And then your thoughts, your first thought that you have about that is the one that maybe you can't control. But then you have to, I am butchering this. You
It's
have
okay.
to change your thoughts. Your second thought is the one that you can control. And so when you can kind of get a hold of that and recognize what's going on within yourself, change your thought about whatever that negative situation was, then that changes your feelings. And because your feelings are going to be different about that, you're going to have different actions. And when your actions are better, you're going to get a better result. And that is even a cycle. Then, you know, the programming and the things that just happened to you are going to improve as well. And so there's, it's something that, and there's been some of our kids who are more of the sort of melancholic, like woe is me kind of personality, who are just more prone to getting stuck in that kind of victim mindset where their thoughts are, you know, something bad happened, somebody hit me, somebody took my thing, or, you know, this teacher hates me, whatever, you know, a thing happened. And then that very negative thought, and they get stuck there, their feelings are miserable, you know, their actions to everybody around them are going to be terrible and awful. The results are, you know, everybody in the house is in a bad mood now. They're getting grounded because of, you know, they're treating everybody poorly, whatever it is. Like, being able to back those kids up, especially, and to see that here is where you have control. No, you can't, you know, change that you didn't get the part that you wanted in the play. But instead of saying like, oh, the director hates me, I'm no good at this, like, change your thought. Like, well, you know what? Actually, I could have practiced a whole lot harder. I decided to go, you know, to hang out with whoever instead of practicing my solo all weekend. So, you know, next time, you know, the actions should be that I spend, you know, a lot more time practicing and memorizing the monologue. And then the result might be that I get a better part next year. And being able to show them where they have control in that situation helps them feel so much more confident and be able to just kind of navigate the world and relationships with that confidence, helps them just really blossom. And I'm thinking of one of my kids in particular who just, it's just her personality to get stuck in that victim mindset. And she would just kind of get stuck in this downward spiral where, you know, everything is awful and everybody hates me, and just, you know, be this kind of really negative, like moody kind of undercurrent in the whole house. And it would just affect everybody. And when we were able to really help her see where she had control and take control, she became so much more confident and so much more herself, truly herself, because she just was, you know, this kind of shadow of herself and just somebody she didn't like and somebody she wasn't happy with. And being able to give her that confidence to feel like she's in more control just flowed over into other areas, every area of her life. And, you know, this particular child, I've even heard her on the phone, like talking friends through that same exercise,
awesome.
You know, in their, you know, the, you know, all the girl drama that happens in high school. And she's like talking with her friends and helping her friends take control of their situation and being creative in those ways has just been, you know, really tremendous. And she was somebody that it was really, really hard. Our other kids would like, we'd walk them through that verbally and they would kind of get it. For her, I had to actually like make it into a worksheet because we'd talk through it and she would just be so, you know, obstinate and frustrated and hard-headed about it and just like, you know, really wanting to get stuck in that bad mood. And so by like writing it out, and it actually became like, you know, a little bit of like a punishment. Like, you know, if you're not going to cooperate and follow through in this exercise with me, then go write this out. And for her, like even the process too, I think of like writing it out, almost like journaling. She was able to like get all the thoughts out and really see them concretely on paper for herself. It was, yeah, just a tremendous hack. I mean, she was probably a kid that, you know, had we not done this, had we just like let her, like she would be a really miserable, moody teenager. And, you know, I think even a lot of like self-destructive behaviors, because she just is so prone to getting stuck in that downward spiral. And because you're able to give her confidence, she navigates her life and relationships and situations in such a different way.
Well, there's a word that came into mind as you were saying all that, and it's a word I learned, I don't know, like 6 or 7 years ago. My dear friend Madeline, she would say, you have agency in your life. And I had never heard that word used that way, but it has been very, very powerful. And then a few years ago, I worked with a really wonderful mindset coach, and there was a situation that we had in our life. And I was explaining, we have to go do this, and we've got this, and then, we're gonna have to do this over here. And she just was like, she kind of shocked me because this wasn't her normal pattern, but she just said, "Hey, stop it." And I was like, okay. And she said, "Is anybody have a gun to your head forcing you to do those things?" And I was like, "No, of course not. Nobody has a gun to our head." And she's like, "So do you actually have to go do that thing? Do you actually have to?" And I was like, "I mean, I suppose we couldn't, but I mean, it doesn't seem like, I mean, it seems like we have to." She's like, "But no, really, really, truly, could you just not do it if you wanted to not do it?" And I'm like, "Yeah, you're right. I don't have to do it." And she goes, "Okay, so you're choosing to do it." And she's like, "I want you to say your little list that you have, and I want you to change the word from 'I have to' 'I get to,' and 'I choose to,' wherever it fits and wherever it's appropriate." And oh my gosh, the difference for myself personally, whenever I reframed my life and what I was going through from truly, truly kind of a victim mentality, like someone's forcing me to do these things, to having agency in my life. And now whenever I feel like, life is tough and I've got all these things that I feel pressured to do, most of the time by my own means, because I'm pressuring myself to have to do them, it gives me so much more agency to not be in that victim mentality. And I actually think, Shannon, some people, you know how some people do, they some I have a kid or maybe two that do lean that way and see what they're missing out on versus what they have, right? Before seeing what they have, they see what's not there. And I also to note that some of them that lean that way can be more artsy, and they can see things and feel things that my other kids don't feel and see the same way. And so it's almost like, while it is thought patterns, I can see in every personality type how things can just go off kilter, right? You can be toxically positive and not be able to deal with real hard emotions. And there's all of these nuances to who God has created us to be. And I think it's beautiful that you found and you saw that, like, oh my gosh, this is a framework that's going to help with this so that it doesn't go a bad way, like you said. And that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing that. Gosh, that's awesome. I'm going to see if we can find a resource or something with that laid out and put it in the show notes, because that is powerful, Shannon. I wish I've had that this whole time. I think it can be so great. So I know we're getting to time here. And so usually at the end of this podcast, I'd love to ask a question. And it's one that just hopefully kind of gives a mode to pause, and also to just to inspire the rest of us. But Shannon, for you, what does it mean to be a good mother? What does that mean to you?
I think it really is leaning into becoming who God created you to be so that you can set the world on fire. And that is something that I live personally. And then as a mom, it's my job to help set my kids up to be able to do the same thing, so that they can become who God created them to be, so that they can in turn set the world on fire. And this, for us as entrepreneurs, has kind of taken a bit of a different flavor. Like there's a lot that comes along with this journey in becoming who God created us to be. There's a lot. And, you know, for our kids to be able to see the good things and the bad things, the struggles, the hardships, and to recognize that leaning into the hard times and that becoming who God created you to be doesn't mean finding the easiest path, finding, you know, the way to retire at 35. It means finding something in your life, or many things, you know, every season might be a different thing, worth working really hard on and leaning into that difficulty and using all of those things to help you really become who you were created to be.
Oh my gosh, that's so powerful. Shannon, I love this so much. This is so, so good. And I believe you are setting the world on fire, and I can see that in your beautiful kiddos. I've gotten to meet a couple and they just seem to be absolutely incredible. How can
Thank
people
you.
learn more about what you've got going on? I know you lead an incredible community of women, who are focused on learning how to dive deeper into prayer. Can you tell everybody more about that?
Yeah. So our main shop, our biggest e-commerce shop is chooselife.com. That's Chews. And that is, our business is focused on helping mainly Catholics dive deeper into prayer. And one of the things that has grown out of that over the past year and a half is an online community of women who are deeply devoted to discovering more the heart of Jesus and really understanding that one of our greatest friends on this journey to learning more about the heart of Jesus is his mother. She was the one on earth who probably knew him the best and maybe loved him the most. And how can we use Mary as our friend, as our mother, to really walk this journey to understanding the heart of Christ, walking with her through scripture to understand what it is to truly love Christ. And so this is a community, it's called the Way of the Rosary, and the Rosary is just a scriptural meditation on the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. And so within this community, we pray together, we study, we pray for each other, and we just find opportunities throughout our day to just pause and pray. And really our kind of our charism, or our mode of prayer is just to find these quiet moments all throughout the day, instead of what can be difficult to sit down and, you know, find 30 minutes of quiet prayer time. It always seems to elude us, especially busy women. And so instead of maybe even feeling frustrated that, you know, you can't commit to that 30 minutes, finding the quiet moments and just praying throughout the day and calling to mind those moments of scripture, and finding the parallels in your own life of, you know, the things that Jesus went through, the agony in the garden, or, you know, Mary's, you know, the Annunciation, where the angel Gabriel came to Mary and she said yes to the Lord's plan. How many times a day can we find those moments to say yes to the Lord, and kind of uniting what Christ is going through with what we are going through? And this is the Way of the Rosary. That's what we kind of call the Way of the Rosary, is living this kind of life based on scripture and drawing those parallels, and in the context of community, holding each other accountable, praying with and for each other. So it's been a beautiful growing community over the past couple of years. And I would just love for anybody to come and join us. It's mainly a group of Catholic women, but we do have a good handful of women from other faiths who just want to know more about scripture and develop a deeper prayer life and do that kind of in the context of community.
That's so great. So what is the, so you said Choose Life, but it's Chews, chooselife.com. Yeah. And then also, what is there a separate URL for the?
Yes, it's wayoftherosary.com.
Wayoftherosary.com. Okay. I think I missed that. That's great. Shannon, thank you so much for coming on. This has been so tremendous. And guys, if you have not, if you don't have any plans yet, I want you to go check out Shannon. And then also too, how can we lean in? And I think that's just the overarching conversation that overarching theme from this conversation that I've gotten is, you know, how do we own this and have, you know, really truly walk in some leaned in parenting, right? Against all the obstacles that are coming our way and be intentional parents for our kids. So Shannon, thank you so much. You're showing up so powerfully for your kids and I just appreciate it. I love getting to see you shine, girl, because you are truly setting the world on fire. And so thank you so much for taking the time to come on.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.